The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer. Terms apply.
Thank you to everyone who supports this show and all the shows on the Major Spoilers Podcast Network. Listen, if you're not already, you can become a Major Spoilers member by signing up at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Special thanks go out this week to Mazer, Lucas, and Kayla, who are our newest patrons. And also a special thank goes out to Jimbo and Spracknell, who upped their pledges this week. Thank you to all of you. You are making all of this possible. Or maybe, you know, we should blame you. You're the ones that are making all this possible. But hey, listen, dear listener, if you are not already a patron and you want to have more of this, then what are you waiting for? Patreon.com/majorspoilers.
The Major Spoilers Podcast covers news, reviews, and of course, spoilers, and goes into details about the topics discussed. So if you haven't read, listened, or watched the items we talk about, you might want to come back later.
I'm Matthew.
I'm Ashley.
I'm Rodrigo.
And I'm Steven, and you're listening to the Major Spoilers Podcast, the podcast for pop culture and comic fans.
In this issue, rule one, never pick up a duck in the dungeon, especially a dungeon zenith. There's a lot to cover this week with Star Wars on TV, Jared Leto in the theaters, and comic creators unionizing, plus Brubaker, Fortnite, and a wealth of helpful tips. So when little Hurly Burly comes by in his curly whirly, tell him you need a ride. Put on your safety goggles for that light, because the Major Spoilers Podcast got down, but we never got tight. We gonna make it through the night, and we're on the air.
Welcome to issue 950, 950 episodes of this podcast.
Wow, wow. Yeah.
And seriously, we couldn't do this without all of our patrons. You want to hear some funny shenanigans? Then you definitely want to hear the pre-show where we try to do some tech support for our good friend Ashley V. Robinson. Also, there's some sad stories, and we go off on a little bit of a conspiracy theory tangent. You can listen to all of that in the Major Spoilers Podcast pre-show. You can only get that when you become a patron over at patreon.com/majorspoilers. The good news is four people are here this week. Thank you again, people who paid and were able to get all four of us here at the same time. How about
let's see if we can all be here for the whole show, though.
Yes. Let's see who drops out first.
Promises.
Let us start with some news. For as long as Major Spoilers has been around, comic creators have been asking, why don't comics unionize? Well, this week, employees at Image Comics have announced the formation of the Comic Workers Union, stating, quote, despite years of union busting and anti-organization sentiments in the American workforce, we know that Image has, at its heart, a desire to be first when it comes to doing the right thing for comic workers. That's why we know we will win, because our success is the company's success. Our success is the creator's success. Our success is the reader's success, unquote. Now, it should be noted that this announcement would only affect full-time employees at Image Comics and not comic creators specifically. And at this time, Image Comics has not responded to the announcement. Now, Ashley, I think there were only like six or seven people who had formed this union at Image. Do you know how many people that represents? Is it like half the workforce, full-time workers at Image, or what?
I have no idea.
Okay.
I have literally no concept of how many people work at Image. This to me is huge if true.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is, we've got a link to it. A lot of people are talking about it. I am in favor of unions, even though I am a business owner, and sometimes unions can be big headaches to unions. But if you go through, and I put a link to the Comic Book Workers United website, where they basically list their demands, and their demands are super, super reasonable. There's nothing in this list that I look at and say, oh, how dare they ask for this? They're just asking for like simple things. It's not that big of a deal. So I kind of am in favor of them unionizing.
So recently Paizo also
did that. Now, Paizo did respond. Paizo did said, hey, we're more than happy that our workers have unionized and we welcome them to the bargaining table and everything. So that is an instance where a union is welcomed. Hopefully Image will do the same thing. But then as you see Amazon trying to unionize and some of the anti-union sentiment that is rising up against that, you know, that could spill over into other unions trying to organize as well. So I don't know. Ashley, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah. Or if any of us remember that IATSE has still not had their terms met,
still going.
that deal is not finalized. The Screen Actors or the Motion Picture Guild that put that announcement out straight up lied and a vote has to be made. So,
yeah. And I wonder if the recent, I wonder if that recent tragedy on the set of Rust, if that won't impact some of these votes and negotiations with IATSE.
Well, that was a non-union. That was a non-IATSE production because of where it was shooting and stuff like that.
But that could give them even more ammunition. Well, I shouldn't say ammunition, but it gives them more. it allows them to come and say, listen, this is something that's dangerous. And we want to ensure that we, because I know a lot of cinematographers that come forward saying, we don't want weapons on set anymore.
There's no reason. There's literally no reason. You can go buy a muzzle flash in any like effects.
Yeah, you can do it. You can CG it very easily these days. And you have been for the last
Brandon Lee was 25 years ago.
Yep.
And this is something that 25 years ago people were saying we need to do something about, and now here we are again.
Yep.
Yeah, so, maybe if we threw someone in jail or put them in prison for manslaughter, then people would take it more seriously.
Yep. Do you think this will lead
That's my hot take.
Do you think that this Image Comics thing will lead to a greater like comic book writers union or a comic book artist or inkers or letterers union? Or will they all be engulfed into some other bigger union soon, Ashley? Is this like the first brick in the wall that's starting to fall? Or is this something that, you know, 2 years from now, people are go, hey, remember when Image Comics tried to unionize?
I think it's going to be the latter. Unfortunately, comics are not well organized structurally on any level. And if this is only a handful of Image employees,
there's 11 of them,
then it'll then it's a nice announcement that will probably be quashed by the end of the year. It's tough, right? Like if it's allowed to go forward and actually make a union, that's wonderful. But ultimately, all of the people who work for Image, they're more protected than the freelancers.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Just, you know, like if you think about like all the money that's had to be made for Bill Mantlo through the Hero Initiative, and like that's the kind of stuff that I would love to see this reflecting. And I only saw the headline. I didn't realize that this doesn't actually, that this is for like the internal workings of it, which doesn't mean it's any less valuable, but it's definitely being sold as this is the WGA, and it's not, which is the Writers Guild of America, which covers TV and film writers, if anyone doesn't know.
So there's a couple of ways that this can go.
YouTube troop.
So a couple of ways this could go. Image Comics could just take this announcement from the workers and say, yes, we recognize you as a union. Please come to the table and we'll do some collective bargaining. The second thing is they could say, well, you need to have a majority of the full-time employees at Image, and I'm guessing Top Cow as well, sign their union cards and say that they want to be in part of this union, at which point
that's the other thing too, right? Image has all these like sub-brands. So like, does this cover Top Cow and
Skybound? And,
oh my God, what is Kirk? Thank you. Skybound, which is a host unto itself. You know, is this going to cover all of the, you know, this being at Image, this not being Marvel or DC, this is stickier.
Yeah.
The more I think about it, it's more complicated.
It, it does bring up the question of even if Image puts this all together and it becomes what people want it to be, is it going to fly with Disney and Verizon or whoever the hell owns DC now?
Yeah.
It's Discovery Networks.
Oh, la-di-da. Okay. They're the guys that gave us that 600-pound life show, right?
I don't know. Well, that's fine. Ashley, what else we got in the news lineup this week?
We've got vampires, in case you didn't have enough of it last week. The latest Morbius trailer. Can you believe that movie's not out? Dropped today. We get a better look at Jared Leto, I don't know, as the living vampire. The trailer gives viewers a bit of a backstory on Michael Morbius. We get to see a potential transformation moment, which actually looks pretty cool. And of course, quite a bit of killing. Morbius arrives from Columbia Pictures in January 2022 alongside Scream because their studios are looking to bury them.
Oh, yeah. What did you guys think?
That is why you put films in January.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was kind of the way, right? Now it just seems like the docket is so full that you can have a movie like Thor show up in February and still do really, really well.
Winter Soldier actually dropped in April when it came out, which was the beginning of people being like, oh, we can put these tentpoles. And then Deadpool, of course, I believe also dropped in February, the original. But
yeah,
I just think this was a movie that was made before the parent company got acquisitioned. It's been moved a bunch. It's clearly not a priority. And if it does Venom levels of popularity, then we might see something interesting with it. But if not, this movie's going to come and go in January. And, you know, that'll be it. We'll be like, well, the Joker was a vampire once. That was neat, I guess.
Yeah. Did you guys, Matthew or Rodrigo, did you get to check out this trailer? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I saw it. You know, I just kind of, I don't know what it is about Jared Leto, but I just don't like to look at him.
Yeah.
Like, and it's not, you know, I'm not talking about like the way he like physically is,
drag
like,
him. His
appearance or something. Just, you know, I'm not a big fan of his acting.
Yeah.
For some reason. So this trailer does some work to kind of get me interested in it. But, you know, obviously it always comes back to the main character. So I'm like, I don't know how interested I am in this.
And the other thing is, I mean, I'm not sure we're going to see a lot of other, like, we see a Spider-Man cameo on a poster and we get a reference to Venom and we do get to see Mr. Mom show up as Vulture for a hot second in the trailer. But I don't think we're going to see like an actual Spider-Man or an actual J.J. Jonah Jameson show up, anything like that. So
I think Jameson is in it, but I think it's just a J.K. Simmons cameo. But my main thing about it is
he's supposed to be in the Batgirl movie too. He all over the place.
He's everywhere. You know, he's also in Avatar. But my thing about it is, I may be the person who cares about Morbius the most, not merely on this podcast, but maybe in the universe. but I don't care. I mean, literally, I don't want to see Morbius as the central character of a movie. And I feel like the fact that it looks like they're doing his cartoon bitey hands is going to make this, you know, silly, wacky, over the top. But I mean, that worked with Venom. People are like, why is this Venom thing selling? It's all grimdark. I'm like, it's not grimdark. It's ridiculous, over the top parody.
I think that is kind of what they're leaning into because of the success of the first Venom movie and the mild success of the second Venom movie. I think that that's what they're doing here with Morbius. Because to me, Morbius, in any incarnation I've seen him, is just this really tragic character that's like, I can't help it, I must feed kind of thing. And then you really feel sorry for this guy who's trying to, number one, find a cure for not only his disease, but other people, but he just can't help it. But I didn't really get that so much in this trailer as, look at me, I'm better now, and I'm going to go kill you. A whole ship full of kill you people. So
he's going to be a wacky superhero who has wacky adventures, and he's not going to be, you know,
maybe I can fly. Yeah. Hey, we've got another trailer to talk about, though, Rodrigo.
Trailer.
Yeah, so the first major trailer for the Book of Boba Fett has arrived. In it, we see Boba Fett and mercenary Fennec Shand, played by Ming-Na, I think, navigating the galaxy's underworld when they return to the sands of Tatooine to stake their claim on the territory once ruled by Jabba the Hutt and his crime syndicate. Star Wars, The Book of Boba Fett, arrives on Disney Plus on December 29th.
That's coming up. A lot of people know what they're going to be doing on their New Year's Eve. My guess is that they will probably release two episodes like they have done in the past. I don't think that they're going to drop everything at once. Disney will want to keep you around for week upon week. I mean, if you look in the last couple of weeks, since What If and what's the other one that was the big hot thing? Visions Loki? Dropped, What If and Loki all done. And we haven't really gotten any big thing in like the last month and a half on Disney Plus, which is really surprising because they were doing really good at here's an 8-week thing. And then you've got, you know, or a 10-week thing. And then you got 2 weeks off and then we got another 10-week thing.
Well, I wonder if I wonder if it wasn't just that they've been dropping things that aren't generally popular with nerds, right? Because they do keep dropping like new series.
Yeah.
But a lot of them are Doogie Howser show. Kid or tween series.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you guys watched that Doogie Howser show on Disney Plus?
I've been wanting to. Because it's like, yeah, it's got the girl from, what is it, Alex Mack? No, not Alex Mack. Andy Mack.
That was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Andy Mack. Yeah, she does a good job, but I haven't seen it now.
Okay. No. All right. All right. Well, but you know, yes, Matthew.
You know, I think that the one thing that they could do with this book of Boba Fett is they could like make sure that his armor is not like painted up and shiny and colorful like they had it at the end of The Mandalorian, because that
I don't think it is.
Me.
In the trailer, it kind of looks still beat up and dinged up quite a bit. It also looks like he has had to wear like a bathrobe underneath it, you know, because he doesn't quite fit in the old armor anymore. He must have gotten bitten by one of those Tatooine spiders. So, you know. Yeah. Yeah. Just saying. Everybody ate.
Don't fat shame Boba Fett.
I'm not fat shaming Boba Fett. I'm just saying that you get older and you start to have things in places where you didn't have things before.
Literally, Temuera Morrison actually getting to play Boba Fett is the only reason I'm interested in
the
show.
Right? I mean, it's really cool.
It's the only thing about it where I'm like, I am showing up for you, my friend, and only you.
He's so good at it.
I mean, that is the cool thing when you can have legacy actors continue to play their part years later. I mean, certainly with the upcoming Ahsoka live action thing. Apparently, what's his name? Is going to reprise his role as Anakin / Darth Vader.
Hayden Christensen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Are we excited about that?
I am.
I kind of am.
Ask because not to be sarcastic, because it is something that has sort of torn Twitter in half.
Hayden Christensen, and, he's fine.
Yeah. Like some people are very for it and some people are like, absolutely not. No, thank you. Hard pass.
Yeah, we still haven't reconciled over the prequels, even though something that everybody likes, The Mandalorian, right? Something that most Star Wars people agree that The Mandalorian is good, spends a fair amount of time in the prequels territory, right?
Mm-hmm.
Saying, yes, the prequels happened. Yes, look, Boba Fett is the guy from the prequels, right?
Mm-hmm.
They could have just as easily turned up their nose at it, so... It's gonna. I think specifically the fact that people didn't like Hayden Christensen. That's really the last frontier, right? If people ever get over that, then people will be okay with the prequels.
So the interesting thing is,
Jake Lloyd can come out of his garage.
Yeah, I don't know about him. I think he's scarred for life. Rodrigo, how old were you when the he was in that first movie? And then he gave up acting forever because everybody just made fun of him.
Yeah, but like he's had a tough go of it, right? Like
yeah,
he's
I think
not
so.
Well.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Rodrigo, how old were you when the prequels came out?
When did they come out? Like 94?
98, something like that. Oh, yeah, 95. Yeah. Yeah, 95. No. It had to have been like 98, something like that.
No, it was 99, right?
Yeah, 99.
So
yeah, was right
the same year as the iconic Backstreet Boys album, Millennium.
Not going to ask how you know that, but congratulations.
One that I liked as a kid is a QAnoner. So that's been a journey for Ashley recently.
Oh, darn it. Did he also show up in Dallas this week?
was I 16? I think I was around 16.
I'm going to bet. How old were you in 99, Ashley? I mean, you were probably like eight. Six.
Oh yeah,
guess.
I was
in 99.
Under six. No, under
six?
10.
Under
no,
10. I'm gonna bet you're six.
We were 29.
So. Well, yes, I know how old I was. I'm trying to find that division because it seems like Rodrigo may have been at an age where you still can kind of remember the original prequel, trilogy. And so the prequels kind of felt like a slap in the face and a betrayal. But for people that were like 10 and under, when the prequels came out, they generally have a very positive feeling towards those movies.
Yeah, absolutely. That's
and
their
so,
Star Wars.
Yeah, that is their Star Wars. So when you bring out Hayden Christensen now, 20 years later, 30 years later, those kids are, you know, in their 20s and 30s. And so they're like, yes, this is my nostalgia factor kicking in. And so I think he's going to get his due. And I think other people will be fine with him. So
I hope that him coming back is the either a huge success or the straw that breaks the back of everybody has to come back and play their old characters. Because I'm honestly getting tired of this only one person can ever play this character thing. Well, Robert Downey Jr. is 65 and Sam Jackson is pushing 80. There's going to come a point when we can't have them, you know.
Well, that was already done, and that was already done in the Star Wars, right? I mean, Obi-Wan Kenobi with Alec Guinness and then the other guy. So,
well, I mean, they've shown that they can do it.
Well, yeah, but they got a different guy to do it.
When they're dead and they recast them, it's different. It's like, you know, hey, here's a new guy playing the same character. That's different, I feel. But yeah, I want to see him come back because I honestly feel that Hayden Christensen is better than the reputation he got.
Right. And then I hope we get a sequel to Jumper. Matthew, let's wrap up our news with our last one.
God. Speaking of Jumper, news that may make you... No, never mind. There's a new Iron Fist coming, ladles what? And jelly spoons. I know. You're like, hey, don't we have an Iron Fist? What happened to that Iron Fist? And I'll tell you right now, Netflix killed him. That's not true. But in any case, Marvel Comics released a press release that said a new Iron Fist series will be coming, and the quote-unquote legendary mantle of Iron Fist will pass on to a new hero in what they're calling a revolutionary transformation of one of Marvel's most fascinating mystical mythologies. Expect a hero's journey in true Marvel fashion. I feel like I should be talking like Stan Lee. As this mysterious character unlocks long-hidden secrets behind the history of his ancient powers and confronts a threat that only the Iron Fist can defeat. Danny Rand no longer has the Iron Fist. The last person to carry the Iron Fist
was Black Panther's
lieutenant.
Yeah, yeah.
Okoye.
Okoye, yeah, yeah.
So this implies that Okoye
isn't there also a miniseries where he gives it to a little Chinese girl?
I don't know.
Was a digital first series?
That I don't know.
It's right.
Because I remember that being a huge deal because that was pretty reactionary to people being like, why is he white?
Yeah.
The last time I saw him was only a couple months ago, and he was depowered, and Okoye had the Iron Fist. But regardless, we'll find out who the new Iron Fist is when Alyssa Wong and Michael Igg bring the show around in February of 2022.
And you may not be wrong about the Netflix series killing Danny Rand, because that was one of the things that I think even Ashley and I had long discussions about on Finally Friday about. You know, they didn't have to follow the Danny Rand story. Yeah, they didn't have to follow the Danny Rand story. They could have cast.
You also could have followed it and done it better.
Oh, yeah.
There's been just a little bit more thought.
It's stolen from Amazing Man in 1939, who is a huge, you know, big white saber protagonist who goes to, you know, a Tibetan monastery and becomes the bestest of all of them. And I feel
people
like
love Dune, which is a white savior story. Like there's a way to do it.
And the Green Llama and all that stuff.
Dune also kind of, you know, deconstructs it too. Yeah. I think I watched Dune this weekend. It's a movie.
You see the little mouse?
Did I see the little mouse?
Yeah. The little mouse is, if you are a book reader, the little mouse is very important.
Yeah. I also saw that Captain Picard is now Thanos, which freaked me out. That was the hardest part for me, was remembering who everybody used to be so I knew who they were.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this Iron Fist thing is going to stick with the new character? I mean, we got a kind of a glimpse of it over at majorspoilers.com. Or do you think that this is going to be, well, you've done
cover,
your...
though, so good.
Hot. Yeah, that's here's what I'm wondering. Like, if you're going to be like done with 12 issues and then we're going to revert back to Danny. Go ahead, Ashley, tell us your fan theory.
My favorite fan theory is that it's Shang-Chi so that we can give him superpowers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that would be fine because he's doing that whole
thing against fighting the Marvel Universe, isn't it? Shang-Chi versus the Marvel Universe? Or is that?
I don't know if that's in continuity.
Oh,
but
okay.
I do know this. When it comes to your Iron Fist, I feel like the fact that they established it as a legacy means that it could stick. And also, you know, we've seen. Sure. Marvel is perfectly legit with having 3 Spider-Men and 4 Spider-Women and 2 Hawkeyes. I mean, there's nothing that says we can't have a new Iron Fist.
Or a whole army of Iron Fists.
Yeah, I mean, Luke is there. There's a Power Man.
You've got the left hand and the right hand. You got to have 2 fists, the left hand and the right hand. There you go. Listeners, We want you to join the conversation about these stories and more over in our Discord server. You can join the Discord server for free. There's a link in the show notes. Or if you are a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers, you get access to secret channels that allow you to listen in as we record Dueling Review live Thursday nights at 8 o'clock p.m. This week, we're doing a Hellboy comic. You're going to want to tune in for that. It's coming your way on Thursday in the secret Discord server. Find out more at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Let us jump into some reviews now, and let me see where everybody's at. Most people are last week. We'll start with Matthew with Batman Fortnite Foundation number one. Not the first time that we've seen a Batman and Fortnite title coming out from DC Comics.
That is very true. Apparently, there was a 6-issue Batman Fortnite limited series, which spins right into this. Batman Foundation, I think, and don't quote me on this, but I think this is a one-shot. But it's written by a whole bunch of people. Scott Snyder, Christos Gage, a man named Mustard, who I believe is one of the people who, you know, writes the Fortnite. Art by Joshua Hickson. And it's a co-production of Epic, which gives us the Fortnite, and DC Comics, which gives us the comics. So here's the thing that I want to make clear before I start speaking on this. Because if you're out there and you're thinking, oh, what's this old guy going to say about this cool new kids video game that's tied up into the comic books? When we at Major Spoilers review a comic, we review the comic. We do not review all of the things that led to the comic. So I did not read the 6-issue limited series that led into this, and it hurt my comprehension of it. But here's the deal. You start with Batman and the Justice League in the middle of a terrible, terrible fighty. And the entire Legion of Doom is trying to get to a magic portal. A magic portal seems to be a portal to Fortnite. So we have the League, and we have Clayface, we have Lex Luthor, we have Mr. Freeze, we have the Batman who laughs. He's back from the dead. This issue literally gives us no explanation of how, why, or what led to him being back from the dead, but at least he's not omnipotent anymore. He does, however, pretty clearly murder Plastic Man, which hurts my head. But we also find that one of the characters from the Fortnite, a person called the Foundation, has come through to the DC Universe. So while all of the heroes are tied up trying to keep the villains away from the portal, Batman sneaks away and goes head-to-head with the Foundation. And it becomes clear to me that contractually we had to have that Marvel versus DC, everybody gets their shots in moment, because Batman and the Foundation have a 3-page fight that's literally, Batman, Foundation, Batman, Foundation. And it comes to the end and they're like, fine, one of my enemies. If you are the enemy of my enemy, you might be my friend. And nobody ever gets the upper hand. Nobody is ever clearly cooler than the other guy. And on the one hand, I kind of like that. But I also feel like the references to Batman Fortnite colon 0 point are not necessarily well explained. And I don't know, you know, DC has in the last couple of years very much been on a read this book and enjoy it. Don't worry about where it fits into a larger continuity. So I don't know who the members of the League are. We hear people talking back and forth on the radio, and occasionally I think Flash and Superman identify themselves, but there's 5 or 6 Justice League voices that don't get identified. And of course, there are 47 Fortnite characters who show up, including a guy with a tomato for a head, whose name is Tomato Head. Basically, you get a little bit of backstory, and Batman is like, I was in your universe at one point, and I came home. And the Foundation is like, wow, that's rare. Nobody ever comes home. And of course, you know, Kemo is in this. Hawkman is in it for a split second. Literally dozens and dozens of characters are in this for a split second. I feel that I had very little context for anything other than big fighty. And when the Foundation finally does get back home, and it seems like the heroes have won, and, you know, the Batman who laughs is taken care of, it turns out that the Batman Who Laughs, who, by the way, explicitly says on panel, oh, this is really going to hurt my Batman Always Wins reputation, which I don't know how I feel about. You get to the end of this story, and I feel like, why is this here? And I understand that this is here for fans of the Fortnite series, but it doesn't really give me any explication of the Fortnite series. And while I am, you know, somebody who does read a lot of old comics and goes into comics sometimes and goes, this is a reference to something that happened in 1977, it always bothers me when that feels like it's necessary to enjoy the book. You know, Roger Ebert was a problematic person, but he always said that he didn't like movies where you had to go and read the holy scripture of the comic books or the resource material before you saw the movie, or else you wouldn't enjoy it. And that's kind of what this is. Also, Tomato Head gets killed on panel. So I cried because Tomato Head is the guy that I love. Also, there's a guy with corn for a head. I believe his name is Cornhead. I don't know. But we do get to see the Batman Who Laughs mowing down dozens of Fortnite characters. Like dozens. Bug guys and bear guys and lizard guys and fruit guys and vegetable guys. And I actually went and started looking them up, and then I realized with alternate skins, there's like hundreds of these characters. And I'm just like, wow. I imagine if you know everyone in this book already, it could be a very cool story. I mean, I enjoy the art. I feel like the art may be the best representation of the Batman Who Laughs I've ever seen, because usually he looks kind of distorted in a way that humans don't. And here he looks kind of like a Batman, only, you know, a crazy Batman. And Batman looks good. Superman looks good in his two panels. It's just, it's a mess. It is just a long and involved story that doesn't feel like it has any ending. And so even though there's a lot here that I feel like is fun and they're trying to do something, I got to the end and I just didn't feel like, first of all, I could justify reading this comic, and I certainly don't want to pay $5 for it. But if you love Fortnite, mileage may vary. For me, two slices of meatloaf for Batman Fortnite, the foundation number one. I mean, I can see the quality of what's going into it, but it's not a coherent individual issue.
So here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
This comic, mm-hmm. you were asking, who's this for? It's mm-hmm. not for you. And I don't mean that to say it's not for you, Matthew. Mm-hmm. Number one, have you ever played Fortnite? I'm just out of
yes.
curiosity.
Yes, okay. I have.
So you're familiar with
it. I played Tomato Head.
Okay. So
Tomato Head main.
This comic book mm-hmm. and the previous one, the 0.1,
yeah.
are aimed specifically at Fortnite players who do not read comic books. Mm-hmm. This is the entry-level drug for those people. Just like all these movie tie-in releases, like when you got to play Thanos.
Right.
In Fortnite. Yeah. I mean, the day that Thanos dropped in Fortnite, my oldest son was up first thing in the morning playing Thanos. And then after he got the gauntlet and he snapped his fingers and was able to wipe out half the people in the game, after he played that for a full day, he was like, Dad, when does that Avengers Endgame movie come out?
Mm-hmm.
People who pick up Fortnite, Batman Fortnite 0.1, or specifically Batman Fortnite Foundation number one, because it does come, if you get the physical copy of the comic book, it comes with a code so that you can get a Batman Who Laughs skin. Those mm-hmm. people are going to get that skin because they want the skin so that they can be different. And then they're also going to, hopefully, what DC is hoping, is going to flip through this and go, wow, look, this has got Superman, or it's got a Flash, or hey, here's a guy that looks like a giant bird. Where
they
can I find more
really
of that?
Teen Teen Titans, the casual Teen Titans skins.
Yeah. So this is all a very targeted marketing campaign to get the million billion people, not China, because China is losing Fortnite next week, next month, something mm-hmm. like that. This is to get all those billions of people who are playing Fortnite who don't read comics to consider mm-hmm. reading a comic. And I understand everything that you said. I agree with in terms of maybe it's a messy story and the art looks good, and maybe it doesn't make a lot of sense in terms of greater point. But this is a splashy commercial that DC is putting out with Fortnite to get people to buy more comic books, or at least to buy more DC related merch. So
to do whatever you need to do to get that Batman Who Laughs skin.
Yeah. So while I'm not saying, you know, your rating of this is probably spot on, I'm not going to pick this comic up. I'll be honest. From a marketing perspective, from DC, this is kind of brilliant.
Yep. Buy the comic and you get a downloadable Batman Who Laughs skin.
Yeah.
That you can play in the game. And I think but that may be the
You have to have the physical copy. Yeah, you can't do this with the digital copy. So you have to go buy a physical comic, which means, guess what? You have to go into a comic book store. So yeah, it's pretty smart. It's pretty slick marketing. Let me just say that. So thank you for that, Matthew. Boy, it came out last week. It took a while for it to arrive on my doorstep. But the latest Ed Brubaker, Sean Phillips tome, Reckless, their most recent thing that they actually started right as soon as pandemic was hitting, and they've already released three graphic novels. Destroy All Monsters arrived last week. It's $24.99 original graphic novel, but it's not like it's a complete story. It's a full book's worth of content. I will say right up front, totally worth your $24.99. If you're a fan of Mac Bolan, if you're a fan of I don't know who else is out there, Remo the Destroyer, if you're a fan of Columbo, if you're a fan of not Matlock, but if you're a fan of Rockford Files, if you're a fan of what's his name who drives the Ferrari, Magnum, this is totally up your alley.
Kolchak,
probably not, because there isn't
the supernatural.
It doesn't have the supernatural aspect in it. Although the book two did have some cult stuff, some Los Angeles cult stuff in the late '70s, appear late '70s, early '80s. So this one, I don't know if they're going to continue to tell this story jumping forward in time, because the first one definitely took place in the late '70s. The second one took place in the late '70s, early '80s. This one takes place in 1988, and it really expands the relationship between Ethan and his love for Los Angeles and his relationship with his assistant, who he's known since she was a little girl and broke into this theater that he owns and lives in. The movie theater shut down, but he's also, you know, like a private investigator, a guy that you call when you can't find anyone else to do the job. And this one ties into the building of the 105 freeway and how it decimated, you know, communities and left them barren and increased the drug and crime factor all along that corridor for decades. And so it's a story that's set around all of that's happening. Corruption, there's sex, there's drugs, there's, you know, switched identities. So you've got all of that just wrapped up in this little, literally a quiet story where Ethan is narrating to the audience, this is how my relationship with my best friend started to fall apart. And these were all the events that fed into that. And here I am, an asshole. And, you know, in the end, I realized that I really hurt a relationship in this way. And man, I think Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips have become the duo that if you tell me they have something new out, I will buy it sight unseen, which is kind of how I fell into the Reckless series to begin with. It is just so good. For me, it is crime fiction, but it doesn't feel like I'm watching an episodic. It doesn't feel like, even though it feels like it's drawing inspiration from the Mac Bolan and the Remo the Destroyer kind of books, it doesn't feel like that. It feels like it's smashing all that together and taking the best parts out and telling you a story in this world that is very, very believable. So this is something I can't wait. They're continuing this. Apparently, if you follow Ed Brubaker on his mailing list, this has been a series that kind of surprised them both in terms of the success and the sales, and they're going to continue on to this. So if you love the criminal stuff, I don't know when they're going to return to that, because it seems like they are going to be into the Reckless world from now on. And instead of releasing stuff, I think they realized this with Pulp, which then led into Reckless. that releasing stuff as original graphic novels and doing it like three or four books a year is really working for them. And I applaud them for doing that. And so the next book doesn't come out until April, and I'm, you know, already down. I cannot wait for that. I'm going to sit down this weekend and read through all three books again. I enjoy the heck out of this. This is not Criminal, although you can feel the bones of Criminal in this. This is not Pulp, though you can feel the bones of Pulp resonate through this book. If you are someone that likes LA crime stories with an actual development of character, then you want to pick up these books. I'm giving this 5 slices of meatloaf out of 5. This is a must-read book, in my opinion, if you're a fan of that genre. And I certainly am. And the art, of course, by Sean Phillips, just fantastic. And the coloring, I think, by his son, Jacob Phillips, I think is his son, also just really great. So top to bottom, love this book. Can't wait to sit down and read all three of them back to back again. So that came out last week from Image Comics. You can find it anywhere. In fact, we have a link to all of the books that we're talking about in this week's show, a link to our Amazon affiliate link where you can buy these yourself, whether that be digital for your Kindle or your Comixology app or physical copies if you are into that. Let us jump to, I think it's a movie, right, Ashley? The horror noir over on the Shudder service?
It is a movie and it's an anthology. Bum, 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 bum.
I didn't see that coming.
Sorry, Amazon affiliate link. It's a Shudder movie. Yeah. I know that the minute I evoke Shudder, a bunch of people are going to go, oh, don't need another streaming service. It's a streaming service too far. But let me tell you, friends, as someone who squats on their friend's Shudder account in exchange for one of my streaming services, blow for blow, I think Shudder has some of the most interesting stuff. They have a ton of like really, really great, really diverse offerings. I watch a lot of foreign films on there. I've been checking out some giallo for Spooky Watch. And then they've also been producing a lot of really cool original content, but because it's kind of a baby streaming service, I don't think they get enough recognition. And so I've seen a bunch of really good originals this year, and this was my favorite, and it came out last week, so I thought I would tell you about it. So horror noir, and it's noir the feminine with an E on the end of it, is a 6-part anthology of short form horror, all presented by Black creative teams, Black crews, Black cast, truly a celebration of Black excellence. One of my favorite comics journalists recommended it, so I said, yes, I shall watch it. And they do a couple of things in each of the shorts that I really like in horror. So one thing that I like is I like it when something is a dumb idea that's like so dumb it goes around and becomes good again, like how Bad Hair is about an evil weave that possesses a girl's body. Like, I think that's great. And horror noir has a couple. They have a vampire piece at the end that's very camp, so they have a couple stories that fall into that. So if you like that, it's very funny. It also touches on mythology. So the opening is a short called The Lake, that's set in a lake in the swampy South. And it deals with what the water can do to you. And, you know, it might shock you to learn that someone turns into a monster, but they do a great job as the character mutates and degenerates into an actual monster, unpeeling how much of a monster they are in the world as well, and the bad things that they've done. So they've paralleled some of the tropes into these really interesting narratives. And what I think is so impressive about it is because, you know, we're all celebrity obsessed. Everyone on this show covers entertainment. So like, we're driven by names and recognizable things. Everyone in horror noir, I think, to the public, are fresh faces, unless you're like really familiar with Atlanta specific actors. And if you are, then I tip my hat to you. This gave me a lot of phenomenal creators to follow. It gave me 6 concepts that truly were good enough to have carried a movie on their own. in a 2-hour period. So it was more like watching 6 mini movies than it was like watching 6 shorts, because they are long enough to have a completed beginning, middle, end, versus when you watch usually like festival offerings are quite short. They're like the best scene or couple of scenes from a movie. So it feels like, even though it's quite a short offering, it does feel like you're watching something of length, because what it gets into and the quality at which all of its, there's some really good prosthetics in 2 of them. So some good monster work. Like I was just so impressed, because shorts are tough. Independent horror is tough. And I was impressed with every single piece here. I didn't think there was a single bit of bad casting. I think Shudder deserves more play. And I think that if in the wake of a project like this, which some people are going to dismiss as a diversity offering, we get such good work, then bring it on. And I cannot recommend, if you check out Shudder for nothing else, check this out. But there's also a lot of really good other stuff on there as well. So this was my like one of my last offerings for spooky season. I was just so impressed by it, I had to come and talk about it on the show.
Nice. It sounds really fun if I had a Shudder, but as I told Matthew earlier this week or last week, I'm kind of done adding new things onto my subscriptions. So
I actually got Shudder this week because there was a movie that I wanted to watch. I'm like,
there you go.
Hey, $4.99.
Now you can watch this one.
That's what I wanted. I wanted Shudder for the same reason. Mm-hmm. It's going to get you, I promise.
What? Oh, no, wait. Was it the same movie? Paranormal Activity Next of Kin?
No, I actually wanted it for Dracula Resurrection.
Oh, I want to see that too.
Now the whole new season's on, so there's also good TV, good right. Drag.
There you go. All right, we're going to wrap up our review segment with Rodrigo checking in on another book from Image Comics that comes out next week.
Yeah. Also, Atlanta Season 3 got a trailer, so that's
oh,
nice.
Man. I want to talk about that at some point. But
yeah, we'll talk about it. Yeah. I don't, like, I love Atlanta, but I have a, like, I'm, like, too emotional about Atlanta, so it's tough for me sometimes. But the book that I'm reviewing, A Righteous Thirst for Vengeance, number 2, which is not, in fact, A Rightful Thirst for Vengeance. That's not it. I should stop looking for it like that. So I reviewed this probably about a month ago on the show. A big important thing about that issue is that it has very little like text. Characters don't say anything. It's pretty much completely silent. You really only see text in billboards and signs, and then the character like checking their phones. This one does have some text. You see the fallout of the kind of gruesome thing that we saw at the end of the first one. But I was surprised when we started going to see that it kind of seems like the main character that we were following was going to go murder the people who were murdered.
Mm-hmm.
It's just somebody beat him to it, right? It's like in this one, you start like retracing his footsteps. And I was like, is that what was happening? There's kind of this thing with this book where, like, not a lot is explained, right? I'm sure somebody right now is just, like, going through the archives being like, I'm going to find something where Rodrigo complains about there being too many text boxes in, like, a Spider-Man comic. And yes, there is, hopefully there's a sweet spot somewhere between explaining, like, thoroughly explaining what is literally happening in each panel and giving you a little bit more information, right? Everything is very visual. So this book really asks you to go back and look at the images, which is nice. I think a lot of the time, especially if you read a lot of comics or if you don't have a lot of time to read comics, we go by the text. You just hop from text box or text bubble to word bubble to word bubble. And then you just kind of take in general the images in. But this book, this one certainly really asks you to stop and pay attention and figure out what's happening. which I can't be bothered to do now, which I want to do, and I actually literally want to go back and reread this again. The art is still really good. Andre Araujo does a really fantastic job. There's something that's very gritty, but still kind of stylized, or very realistic, but still kind of stylized. I don't want to say that it looks like Frank Quitely's art, but there's something about it that is that is similar, that is, that has the same sort of, like, I don't know, like grunge to it. Like, still looks like a cartoon, still looks grungy at the same time. Altogether, I'm going to give it 3.5 slices of meatloaf. I think, really, if there are issues with my approach to it, it's kind of on me. But also, I was like, yeah, Rick Remender, that sounds familiar. And then I looked him up, and I'm like, I've probably liked one out of every 5 things that I've read from Rick Remender. So I'm liking this, but like, there was like just something that went off in my head of like, have I ever liked a Rick Remender book? Yes, I have, but not too many. So I'm ready to be converted by Righteous Thirst for Vengeance. I just kind of need to see where the story's going and how it develops.
Nice. Nice, nice, nice. And again, if you want to jump on the bandwagon with Rodrigo, there is a link in the show notes where you can purchase this using the Amazon/Comixology affiliate link. It doesn't cost you anything extra. A little bit comes back our way. Okay. I think I've told people to stop messaging me when I'm trying to record a show, but here we are now to get into our main trade. And I don't know how, why, or where how this found a way onto our list. Was this something
that come from?
Is this something that you recommended, Rodrigo?
Reading Eternals this week.
I thought we were too, but then I look and it's like, we didn't have access to the Eternals.
So I can't wait to hear you guys explain this to me.
Okay.
Did you recommend this, Matthew? Did you recommend this, Rodrigo?
I've never heard of this. You sent a list in 22. Okay, here's the thing, people. Steven sends the year in advance.
Yeah.
And in 2020, you sent me a list and said, hey, these are all of the things. And I said, okay. And it was like, what even is this?
And then somehow we didn't review it in 2020 because of a skipped episode or something. And so I moved it to 2021. And so I'm looking at this and I'm like, I have no idea how, you know, if somebody recommended it, this seems like something that would be up Rodrigo's alley. And so I was like, maybe this was a Rodrigo book.
Called for it, though. It feels like something.
No. So here's the thing. When I put the list together, I solicit everybody to say, hey, is there a comic that you guys think we should review this year? And people usually write, like, what's that Stray Cat, Space Cat thing, Rodrigo, that...
Yes, Strayed. Yeah, Strayed. I recommend it.
That's great.
So here's the two sides of what I recommend. I recommended both Strayed and the super gross Animal Man. So
Yeah. That's how these things get together. And so then we curate the list and we reach out to publishers. And I even went back into my email going, who asked for this? And I could only find
this.
Yeah, I can only find 2 emails. One, me reaching out to NBM Publishing, who released this in a trade. And there's like 2 or 3 trades of this, requesting a copy of it. And then the one that I sent out this week to all of you saying, hey, we're reviewing this book this week. Rodrigo, what is Dungeon Zenith Duckheart all about?
So, Dungeon Zenith Duckheart. I mean, Dungeon Zenith is the name of the work. Duckheart is the name of this volume, right?
Right.
It is apparently the story of... So the setting is somewhere in this fantasy world, there is an enormous dungeon whose job is to be a dungeon. Sort of like the Dungeons and Dragons sense, in that adventurers try to get through the dungeon and take treasures. And the dungeon has an administrator who makes sure that there's treasure in there, who makes sure that the monsters are very dangerous, and also who kind of promotes the dungeon to make sure that people want to come tackle it. Also, a lot of the people are animals. Mm-hmm. So that administrator is a bird of some kind. Our main character is a duck. Mm-hmm. There's like a dragon guy, but I think Because people keep referring to him as a crocodile. So maybe he's just a red crocodile with wings.
Nah, he's a dragon. But yeah, but his wings got cut off. So or they got
he's a crocodragon.
Yeah.
His wings do get cut off. Okay. So now that's the setting. This is the story of an underling that works in that dungeon, accidentally kills a champion that his boss wanted to see, impersonates him, and then gets sent on a quest to murder someone else, thinking that he's the champion. Yeah. And so that's kind of where it goes. Very early on, he gets his heart taken out of his chest, kind of as an assurance that he's gonna like do the job. So he's doesn't have a heart in his body, kind of like an Enchantress and like the Suicide Squad movie kind of deal.
Enchantress.
Yep. So and then adventure, like really weird, wacky adventures ensue.
He's got a sword.
Consciousness adventure.
He's taken the barbarian's armor and sword, and he can't draw the sword from its sheath unless he's completed three awesome deeds. And if he tries to use another weapon, the sword will kill him. And if anyone else touches his weapon, it will summon the spirit of previous bearers of the sword. So, at one point, the duck is just, like a wimpy kind of duck guy. And at one point, he's trying to fight these monsters, and one of the monsters touches his sword. And so suddenly he turns into this buff former hero that, kills all the monsters in the way. And that is kind of how this story goes. And then for some reason, to me, the front part of the volume is more funny, like, haha, look at this weird situation that we've put this duck guy into. And then the back half is like this like philosophical discussion on what does it mean to believe in yourself and to be a true warrior and all of these things. And it's just like, I wasn't prepared for that turn.
Weirdly philosophical. Yeah.
The
thing that I liked is his belt is constantly yelling at him.
Yeah,
because the belt is the arbiter of whether or not he is
he can draw that sword.
Worthy of the sword,
but as he goes through, the belt is like, you have to do this, and he does it, and the belt is like, well, maybe that doesn't count. And it becomes clear after a while that the belt doesn't necessarily want him to become a warrior, but as it goes on, he and the dragon kind of form this weird bond, and
they're like buds.
I love the ending. Because they're both like, yeah, I totally got what I thought I wanted, but, I didn't want it. I almost got married last night. Yeah, I almost kept a kingdom. So it's this weird buddy comedy, but it sort of goes. Okay, the word that keeps popping in my head is stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
It's just.
Yeah, maybe to a point I would agree. I mean, so this is not a web comic. But it reads like a web comic because every page is like a standalone post, or at least I can't find any reference online that this was a web comic, but there's four volumes of this book. So if there was a web comic, it would certainly show up in the search results when I type in Dungeon Zenith web comic, as opposed to just giving me links to all the NBM publishing pages on this. Mm-hmm. But it reads like every page is a web comic. And then over time, the story just builds up and you accumulate all this knowledge about this, about these characters and their adventure.
And in fact, a big part of the reason why this feels like a webcomic is because we're already like two thirds of the way through let's say halfway through the story, or like the first arc, where the main character finally says what his name is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it feels like something that is created one page at a time. And then at some point, the writer was like, I never gave this guy a name, or something like that, which you see in web comics all the time, where like characters will like suddenly, as the Cerebo meter starts to go up, they have to like backtrack and start explaining things because, we've decided to be serious.
Yeah. And that is interesting to me. It also feels like it was not written in English.
So this author, Lewis Trondheim, I'm going to read his bio. This is off the NBM webpage. Lewis Trondheim is one of the leaders of the new generation of comic artists, bringing in novel ways of creating comics. He helped usher in a much longer and sophisticated narratives in the graphic novel form. He is a leading author in Europe.
Yep.
So, and then Joanne Scharf,
the asterisk feel that I keep getting.
Yeah. Joan Schraff, or Char, is an artist, writer, and film director, known for his adaptations of The Little Prince, best-selling title The Rabbi's Cat, and so much more. So he's a leading artist, scriptwriter, and colorist for many popular series, including becoming the regular artist on Zenith's series Dungeon, the one that we are reading. So, yeah, Euro comic, apparently.
Yeah.
Cool.
It has a feel like it started out being one thing, and then somewhere about halfway through turned into something entirely different. And I love it when a book does that. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I didn't necessarily fully understand either of the things that it was. But it definitely reminded me of my days reading like translated issues of heavy metal and stuff, where you're just like, oh yeah, this, you know, this kind of felt like the early Asterix before he started, you know, everything was building on everything and building and building and building. In those earlier volumes, I kind of felt like this may have been, it started out maybe kind of emulating parts of that.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that I did not read this in one sitting. I took a break for about 2 hours, about halfway through the book, which just so happened to coincide when it switched from the hooded tentacle monsters to the Kill the Goblin King story arc. And so when I came back and read it, I was like, oh yeah, this is nice. There's something about it that I don't understand why I like it. It may be the deep philosophical discussions about, you know, what is life? What is love? What is meaning? You know, what's my point in the universe? Cause at some point there's like a giant woman who's running around naked through the woods, and the dragon is kind of in love with her, but because of Cyrano de Bergerac kind of things, she thinks that she's in love with the duck, and the duck doesn't really give a crap either way. And so the dragon is just like, oh man, I've got this unrequited love, and everything she's talking about the duck is everything that I did. And he's too afraid to speak up or something. And so there's like this weird, just, it's weird in a good way, not weird in a avoid this because you're not going to understand it. It's just not what you expect in a traditional comic book that is supposed to be making fun of Dungeons and Dragons.
Right. I don't think this has Dungeons and Dragons as much in its
Is because that's how they bill it, as an epic spoof of Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, and the cover is definitely a parody of an old Dungeons and Dragons source book. I don't know. I kind of love the fact that our main characters are Herbert and Marvin.
Yeah.
When you're going through these stories, that for me is just the perfect Philip on a Philip. When you're like, hey, hi, there's an evil dragon and his name is Marvin, and it turns out he's not evil.
And he's nice. I'm curious, for our European listeners, are you familiar with this series? And if so, please let us know. Just write to us, or jump in our Discord and let us know, because I have a feeling that this may be more popular overseas than it is here.
Like the soccer comic.
Yeah, like the soccer comic.
Or like soccer comics in general.
Like Black Sad.
Specifically the one that we read that I don't remember the name of.
Yeah. Roy of the Rovers.
Roy of the Rovers.
There we go. I knew it was alliterative.
So it may also be fortuitous that we read volume one this week on the show, because November 16th of this year, volume four releases. I literally don't know how this wound up on the 2021 list. I kind of want to read all three other volumes that are coming up.
And you want to catch up?
I do want to read volume two, three, and I want to read this volume four when it comes out. I'm curious, for those of you who are familiar with Usagi Yojimbo, does this feel like that?
A little bit, although I feel like Sakai has more of a handle. I don't want to say it like that, because then it sounds like this book isn't right. Sakai has a different approach, where even like a quick short story is something that's designed to be one bit of story, you know, an episode in Usagi's life, or this is a story that, you know, makes a specific point or hits a specific theme or shows off a creepy thing with a bowl on its head, you know. Whereas I feel like this is less episodic and more of, you know, kind of an open source universe, yeah, like a Grand Theft Auto comic book.
I think to me, if you look at something like Usagi Yojimbo, it, like, there's lots of stuff, or like the sort of the structure of Usagi Yojimbo feels deliberate. And the structure of Dungeons in it feels frantic, right?
Yeah.
I'm not saying either one of those is better, and I'm not saying one is like has more artistry or whatever than the other,
right.
But there is this thing where, like, in Dungeon Zenith, characters, like, an accident happens, and then that accident has future impact on everything else that's happening, right? And it just kind of, like, when you're reading it, it just feels like it just, like, you're going downhill, and you can't really grab onto anything to really stop yourself. And it's kind of fun, but also you don't know if at some point you're going to hit a rock and flip over to your face, right? It's like, that's kind of what this book feels like.
Okay.
Now, I am finding references online to Dungeon Twilight.
Yeah,
which
apparently
is a story which is later on in the continuity of this, you know, this shared universe.
Or before. Zenith may be the last arc, because I'm seeing,
I think Zenith
Dungeon
is in the middle, because there's one called Early Years.
Yeah, that's volumes 1 and 2.
Right, and then there's this, and then there's Dungeon Twilight.
Well, Dungeon Zenith is the last part of this, so. Yeah, so Zenith, I don't know. Go ahead, Rodrigo.
I was going to say, if it's following like the sun, then the Zenith would be in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Right. And Twilight would be last, because Twilight is explicitly after this story. Twilight is like an end of the world story, from what I'm finding. And apparently it was written in French, which is why it's hard to googly search. So.
Yeah, so I don't know. I am rather keen on this. I kind of recommend it. I kind of like everything about it. I think that if you are a webcomic person, that you're into reading webcomics, even though this is probably not originating in webcomic form, I think you're going to dig it. If you're someone who likes a little quirky take on your high fantasy dungeon stuff, I think you're going to enjoy it. Now, it's going to be a very different experience. It's not like your Dungeons and Dragons comics that IDW is putting out. It is not your Black Sad level of introspection, but I think it's somewhere in between those two. And if you like, you know, little scrawny ducks running around beating up bad guys and making his way through a million goblin dungeon with just a feather and a stick as his weapons, then yeah, man, I think you need to pick this up. Matthew, what do you think?
I love a story that feels like even the creator didn't know where it was going. And when you get there, it feels like this is where the road went. You know, like you get in the car and you go somewhere and you're like, oh, here's a cool thing that I saw. And then, oh, and here's even a weirder cool thing. So when this story makes the turn from wacky fun to slowly building up into, you know, a treatise on the nature of isolation and reality and, you know, heroic tropes, I was like, yeah, this is cool. This is amazing, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to describe, because if you say, well, this is a parody of Dungeons and Dragons, I don't feel like that really fits. And you can't really say that it's like, you know, a European comic. You can't say, hey, remember Tintin, because that doesn't really fit. But it's like nothing and everything. And I also recommend it, especially since you do get a lot of interesting deconstructions and just, you know, complete inversions of stuff that you expect to see in a high fantasy or adventure fantasy setting. And the fact that, you know, the once evil dragon turns out to be a pretty decent guy, and at one point he's throwing off his armor. This skull represents the memory of my ancestors, and this one is to keep away the spirits. What about that?
And what about that one?
That's just to cover my pee-pee.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, okay, that's funny. I don't know why that's funny, but I think that's funny, and I think that this is worth checking out. If, you know, if that sounded in any way entertaining to you,
yeah,
go ahead, read this comic.
Rodrigo, what about you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think it's just like, it's really weird. It's a really weird book, and I really appreciate that. And sort of like it does feel like a webcomic. It feels like European books that we've read before, but not exactly like that. There is a moment where the duck gets, they're trying to teach him how to fight, and they're like, we're going to put you in this cage with a bunch of people, and you're going to have to fight them. And they throw him in the cage, and right after they throw him in the cage, it says, in the cage there's the five vampire dwarves, Siegfried the Barbarian, and Henry the Mouse.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, as it turns out, like, the most deadly thing in there is Henry the Mouse. And it's like, just that image, I love that image. I think I'm going to make it my desktop, because it's just... So it's just so funny. It's like,
mm-hmm.
just like in composition and like what these characters look like, it's just so funny. Yeah, right. It's like, I don't know, there's just something about this book that is like very charming at all times. At times it really feels like it kind of slows down and meanders a bit, but you can mm-hmm. always just take a step back and look at how like weird and funny and interesting all of these character designs are, even if the story is not moving you.
All right, so Ashley Victoria Robinson, you didn't have a chance to read this book this week, but now you've listened to us describe this weird comic book. Is have we convinced you to use that Amazon link and to make a purchase of this book so that you can read it? Well, I mean, you've got the review copy, but have we convinced you to read this book?
You know, it's funny, when this started, I was like, this is going to be bad, friends. And then it was really fun to sort of just sit back and listen. It was like when I used to live in a really terrible apartment in Hollywood, and then I was listening to Major Spoilers while one of my roommates ripped the air conditioner out of the wall and threw it at the other air conditioner, or threw it at the other roommate. So it was very like fond memories sitting here. And yes, actually, it definitely seems weird, but... You evoked Black Sad, which means I'm automatically in. And anything that, kind of like I was talking about in Horror Noir, is so weird or so different that it comes back around the circle of doubt to being good again, I'm in. Like, I'm going to check this out tonight, and then I'll be all caught up when we re-record this, because time is a donut.
Yep, exactly. Now, I do not see, I'm looking at the NBM section over on Comixology, and I don't see this listed there, so it looks like... The only way to get your hands, dear listeners, on physical copies is to go over to Amazon. And if you do go over to Amazon, either for this one or for the whole lineup, because it does look like they have most of them there.
Sounds like holiday present buying.
Yeah, it definitely does. And certainly the NBM, that's the number N, or the letter N, B as in boy and M as in Mary, publishing website seems to indicate that they have all of those for sale there as well. And I'm so tempted to just drop, you know, like $150 right now to buy all of these, everything in this series to read it. I don't know. It's interesting. So again, if you are one of our European listeners, and we know that there are a lot of you who do listen to this show, thank you so much. I want to hear back from you if you are familiar with this. And please share your feedback. Go over to our Discord server and jump into the Major Spoilers podcast channel and just let us know. You know, we're always checking in, all of us, Matthew, Rodrigo, myself, Ashley. I don't know if you're in on the Discord server or not, but, you know, people
you
are always jumping
me.
In there.
I'm on Discord.
I didn't know that. Well, you know what? I will send you a link and we'll get you the a gold level, or actually we'll get you an admin level access in there. So you have access to all of our stuff. And then you guys can come and hang out with us and a whole bunch of other awesome people. Come into the general chat and get welcomed by all the cat gifts that you can handle and so much more. But it sounds like everyone's a big fan of Dungeon Zenith Volume 1, Duckheart. Volume 2 is The Barbarian Princess. So all that's coming up. And I think that's where we're going to wrap up this issue, our 950th issue. Thank you so much for listening, dear listener. Thank you for being part of the Major Spoilers experience.
For the 950th time, you can give us your feedback. We love to hear it. So you can join the cool kids at the aforementioned Major Spoilers Discord server. Lots of cool stuff over there. You can share your thoughts and reactions to this episode and, you know, make fun of Carl.
No, who's Carl? Or drop us an email to podcast@majorspoilers.com and you might just hear your words on an upcoming episode.
And don't forget, you can support the show and everything we do by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers.
Let me just look and see what we're doing next week. Steve Canyon. Not the very first Steve Canyon, but we're definitely going to be looking at some Steve Canyon comic strips next week. Why? Because
why did
we know
you do
that you love
to us.
Why? You don't like Steve Canyon? I know why. Because we know that you love comics and we do too. And we will talk with you soon.
Fat Dick's Ray Vision of Superman. I could save a few bucks and stand around and read through the covers of the comics on the stand. But although every other page would be backwards, I suppose, I could still read the evens and the odds. Well, I don't know. Guess I haven't thought this all the way through. Plus, as soon as the comic book store guy knew, they kicked my butt out on the corner. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Think about a better way. If I was hulking green or gray, I could just bust through that brick wall, take their comic books away. But then the little meat would deal with all the tanks and bombs and guns. Have you ever tried to read a series with all that going on? Guess I need to rethink this plan. How would I back and board my comics with such huge hands? Guess I already told ya. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. If I'm Star Raven rich like a man of iron, I might not be surprised if I that I might actually have the heart cold to follow an entire storyline. Would I really even need to read up on all those escapades? I mean, who needs such distractions when your sister's such a babe? But the downside is such a beast. Being shot up in a fun, being the Middle East with a king, son, throwing soldier. What a major spoiler. What a major spoiler. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What a major spoiler. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a major spoiler.
This podcast is copyright 2021 by Major Spoilers Entertainment, LLC.
What's the best part of a Dunkin' Run? The coffee? Is it the coffee or the $1 donut or $2 stuffed bagel minis or $3 sausage, egg, and cheese that you can add to it? The answer, of course, is yes. Time for a Dunkin' Run. $3 offer available on sausage, egg, and cheese sandwich only. Excludes specialty donuts and fancies. Offer valid on medium or larger coffee. Price and participation may vary. Limited time offer terms apply.